This is the Pitch and Mind Cricket Coach Show, number 47. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Mind Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sappas from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of coaching. Ian Ponch has another fast bowling tip with us, and as usual, we answer your questions for this week. Well, David, we're well into our season now. And can you believe it? The first day of our game, it was the hottest day we've experienced so far.
Oh,
so
marvellous.
We really put up an average performance.
Oh no, what happened?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Well, we bowled first, and in stinking hot conditions, and they managed to do everything right, the other team. Mm-hmm. They ended up with 280 off about 55 overs.
Alright, okay.
And all our bowlers, the way we bowled reminded me of Australia at Lords in the Ashes. Like, nothing was going right. The other team just kept the run rate ticking. And the only highlight for us was one of our medium pacers came on and managed to get a hat-trick. But then that brought one of their best batsmen, and he got 100 in big time. So, yeah. Personally, I got 3 wickets, but at a very expensive run rate. And about, I gave away about 63 runs in 11 overs, so...
Ouch. And
not something to smile about, I'm sure. But
was it bad bowling or good batting or a combination of both?
I think it was just bad bowling because we were bowling way too short, not in the right lines. And the pitch, we played on a synthetic wicket this week and it was unbelievably skinny.
Right.
Like, we couldn't, anything we bowled wide was off the pitch. So we couldn't bowl anything that they could cover, drive or cut.
Right.
So anything off the pitch was a no ball, basically. So it didn't really give us much width to work with, so it'll be interesting to see how the other team comes back next week.
Yeah, so do you think you can still get a result?
Well, we hope. At the moment, everyone is pretty dejected because 280 is a lot to get, especially we consider ourselves a bowling team as well, so we're going to have to try and sort of knuckle in and sort of get the runs in partnerships. At the end of the innings, our captain sort of got us together and said, it is achievable if we sort of, all our top order batsmen bat in partnerships and not just for ourselves, but sort of look at the team's perspective. So yeah, we've got a big job ahead, but it's been a pretty average start to the season.
Well, you're still in with a chance. I mean, if you bowl badly, then maybe the opposition will bowl equally as badly and you can get those runs.
Yeah, exactly. And David, at times like these, it shows us the importance of coaches. I mean, in juniors cricket, whenever something went wrong or if we were bowling really badly, at the drinks break, the coach would sort of reel us in and sort of get our motivation up and give us tips here and there. But with a team without a coach like us, we just sat there and, like, at the drinks breaks, we were all sort of down. None of us were really up to sort of hype up the team because it was so hot. So, yeah, coaches do have an important role nowadays. Speaking of coaches, David, because this is our theme this week, have you ever coached teams or kids? And do you do a bit of coaching in the off season or anything?
Yeah, I do. I've coached all different levels, and it's interesting to see the sort of different reactions to the different kind of levels and ages that you get, because some people are more responsive or more prepared to be coached than others, really. So it's an interesting way. You have to approach it in a different way depending on who you're coaching. I mean, it's going to be different coaching sort of top-level players compared to coaching complete beginners who are aged 8 years old, obviously, isn't it? So
yeah.
You've done some coaching, haven't you, with younger players?
Yeah, that's right. When I used to play in the open team at school, we had to do a bit of coaching with the junior teams, and we found that it was challenging at times because there was a fine line between coaching, whereas you can't sort of take it too seriously with them because if they lose their sort of fun for cricket, then they'll lose their motivation altogether. So we have to keep the fun aspect with their coaching for the junior players. Do you think that's really important, David, especially when people coach younger kids, that they don't forget to let them have a bit of fun at times?
Yeah, I think that's a really common mistake that a lot of coaches make with younger players, that they forget that the main reason that they're there is to have fun. You know, it's not, especially with the younger players, it's nice to win, it's nice to you know, be part of a team. You know, it's nice to sort of learn new skills and things like that. But the main reason is to enjoy yourself and have fun. And if you take it very seriously, you know, and you always put your best players in at the top of the order, and they're also all your best bowlers, they're also your best batsmen, and you know, you've got a kid who's all he does is fielding drills, and he has a net once a week, and he never gets a bat, and he never gets a bowl, then you know, that's not necessarily much fun. Whereas, you know, if you've got senior players, even senior club players, then you know, it's not slightly different then, because the fun aspect is a little bit less, because people are taking it a little bit more seriously, and it just goes up, sort of goes the higher level you go, the more serious it becomes. But you should always have that element of fun, even if you're playing Test cricket, I think. So, and I think that's up to the coach to sort of use his whatever style he's got to try and get that as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of coaching, David, we have Ian Pond, the fast bowling guru, who I reckon is one of the best fast bowling coaches in the world. And he's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, so we're really lucky. And he's here this week with another fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what piece of advice he has to give for us this week.
Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
Thanks, David.
Got a question this week from a regular email, P. Novotny. They are a spinner, in fact, but they've got a pace-related question about their spin bowling. They say, all my teammates say I have a good off-spin action with a good line and length, but I lack pace. Is there anything I can do to increase the pace of my off-spin?
I coach fast bowling, but obviously, you know, being the coach I am, also coach other disciplines, and I do work with a couple of young spin bowlers, leg spin and off-spin. The simplest way to bowl a little bit quicker is obviously to grip the ball a little bit harder. What you'll find with some young bowlers is, particularly got small hands, is they aren't able to grip the ball very well, and what it tends to do, it tends to slide out the top of the hand a little bit, so it doesn't turn that much, and sometimes it comes out a bit slowly at the top of the hand. So one simple thing you can try to do, if you don't want to speed up obviously the speed of your arm, is to grip the ball a little bit harder. And I've been bowling some off spin recently, playing some club cricket, and what I've found is that if I grip the ball a lot harder, it goes flatter and quicker, and if I loosen my grip and have my fingers a bit closer together on top of the ball, it tends to come out the top of the hand a bit more, with a bit more flight. And this is a natural variation that any good off spin coach should teach you, and certainly any first class spin bowler would know about. And it's one of the simplest ways to increase the speed of the ball, and also the revs on the ball, and also the trajectory of the ball, keeping it a bit flatter, is to widen your fingers, get your grip a little bit wider, set the seam into your fingers so the insides of each finger really bite into it hard, hold that ball hard, and then try and fizz the ball out a little bit faster with the rotation. That will naturally increase the speed of the ball, and also the fact you're holding the ball tighter means it comes out of the hand a bit faster and flatter as well. So you give the illusion of pace, but there's a genuine increase in pace as well. I'm assuming the question is talking about slightly increasing the speed and not going from, say, 40 miles an hour to 65, for example. If we're talking of somebody bowling a little bit slowly, it usually means they also lob the ball rather than, you know, get a good loop on it. So anything that increases the revolutions of the ball will hopefully help it to flight better, hopefully help it to drift and dip a little bit better, and also that tighter squeeze on it, the ball tends to come faster out of the hand because you give it a bit more oomph when you let it go. That's definitely worth trying. I mean, there are other things you could do involving changing actions, but because I don't know what the questioner's action looks like, I would say just altering the grip and messing around in the nets with grip, experimenting himself. He may find that slightly different grips, slightly different thought processes can help him get the ball out a bit faster. But it's a good question, and I do get that a lot with spin bowlers asking about speed and trajectory. Certainly, you know, and it normally comes down to the grip on the ball, to be honest.
Thank you, Ian, for your time. And if you want coaching from Ian Pond, you can access PitchVision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Welcome to the listeners' questions section for this week, and this week's theme is coaching. David, I know you're a top coach, and you'll know most of these answers, so I hope you're ready, because the first question is, as a coach, how do you run a net session to get the most from it? And that's from Simon, David. How would you run an ideal net session, David?
Well, I think the important thing with running a net session is to keep it as organized as possible. Because the danger with nets is, the big danger with nets is, they can very quickly descend into what is basically a free-for-all. You just turn up, you have a hit, you have a bowl, everyone has a bowl, and then, you know, by the time the last batsman in, all the bowlers have got fed up and gone home, and there's only, you know, the wicketkeeper and two guys who never bowling in the net, and you've only got 2 minutes left, and you just start smashing it all over the place, and nobody learns anything.
Yeah.
So I think coach wise, you need to get it. You need to get a structure in place. And so I'd say that the first thing is to kind of set the tone with a good warm up. You know, make sure that everybody warms up before they even go into the net, purely for good habit.
Yeah.
Okay, you might not necessarily need to warm up, but purely for good habits, you want to warm up before you start bowling, and you want to warm up before you start batting, really. So just a simple warm up, and then keep under control how long people are in the net. You know, what order they go, they're going into the net, how long they're staying in the net, and who's bowling. You know, ideally you want to split those nets out into, you know, you've got a fast net and a spin net. That would be sort of ideal.
Yeah,
so you can, you know, you can just swap nets halfway through or whatever. I would say then, in terms of giving it, making sure that everyone stays focused by giving everybody a goal, you know, like when you have at the end, when you have, you know, right, last six balls, you've got to get 20 runs or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why can't you do that right from the start? So, right, first 5 minutes of your net, you just have to play as if it's the first, you know, 20 runs of your innings, you know, and the same as the bowlers. You know, ideally you get you want the bowlers to bowl in six ball overs, really, so they can, you know, so it's more realistic. We had an interview a few shows back with the LCA where they said you could have two bowlers in a net, and that works out quite well, because by the time one bowler has run in and bowled his ball, and he's turning to walk back, then the second bowler is ready to bowl. He can run in it. So the batsman's getting a good amount of balls, but the bowlers are sort of sharing it well. And then if you've got more bowlers, then the other bowlers rest for those six balls, and then they swap around. So that's quite a good idea.
Yeah.
And really, just, you know, just keep it as focused as you can. Don't allow messing about in the nets, because nobody benefits from that. Unless you are specifically, you've got a specific idea of, well, today we are just going to have a bit of a mess around in the nets. You know, we're not going to work on anything, just to mix things up a bit. Because there's no harm in having a bit of unstructured messing about sometimes as well. Because, you know, we do forget that we go back to that fun element, don't we? You know, the good thing about that unstructured messing about is it's good fun. You know, everyone has a bit of a laugh, and, you know, it's good. You don't necessarily get the best out of it, but, you know, it's just good fun. So you can do that as well to mix it up. It depends how serious you're taking it, really. You don't want to, if you're coaching a senior club side, then perhaps you don't want to do that messing about. If you're coaching you know, a young junior side, and they've been doing some serious stuff the last few weeks, why not have a bit of fun? Why not have a knockabout? Maybe not even go in the net. Maybe just go onto the outfield and play a knock-up game instead. Why not? So ideally you do it in an organised way, but because that's the most beneficial. But if you want to have a bit of fun, have a bit of fun as well.
I guess in net sessions, David, it's really important to replicate match situations, isn't it? Because even in the international players, they sort of try and get the pitch closest to a match, closest to the ground they're going to play on, and they sort of simulate moments they would where the pressure they'd be under. So I remember Tendulkar, when he was going to face Warne, and there was this big hype about Warne versus Tendulkar, he got a lot of leg spinners from India, and he to ball into the rough from around the wicket to him, because he knew that's what Warne's going to do. So it is really about replicating match situations, isn't it?
Yeah, that's another thing you can do, exactly. And that's a good thing that pitch vision can do, of course. You know, if you've got the pitch vision sensor system, then you can set the fields and you can see whether you are out when you hit it and see how many runs you get when you hit it. So it's a good thing if you're not quite sure what's going on. You know, you can sort of track your progress with that. But you don't need it. Yeah. I mean, you can just do it. You can just sort of do it manually. It's not quite as effective, of course, but you can do it just as well by saying to yourself, right, first few minutes I'm going to play myself in. Next few minutes I'm going to be a little bit more aggressive. You know, maybe the last few minutes I'm going to treat it like it's the death of a 2020 match. So sort of split it out like that. So, and the same with the bowlers. You can say to yourself, right, you know, this is the match. In your head you can easily say, this is the match situation. And you can say to the bowler, this batsman, this is the match situation. And then you've got a simulated game on your hands then.
David, our next question is from John, and he says, why do we even need coaches? Shane Warne doesn't like them. David, I'm critical of this because you hear a lot of this on, like, at the pub or with mates, and they always sort of criticize coaches saying they don't really have a role in cricket. But I think you've mentioned this before as well, but maybe in international cricket they don't have as much of a role, but anything lower than that, even state cricket or county cricket, coaches do have a role because players are unsure of themselves at that stage, especially junior cricket where players are sort of really unsure about their technique, their game. Coaches are there to sort of assist them in everything that's happening around them. What do you reckon, David?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's obviously, as you say, the different levels have different ways of looking at it. If you're talking about junior level, then that's fairly obvious. You're teaching players the skills of cricket then, so that's the obvious thing that a coach would do. And you're also being you're being an organizer as well. You know, you're making sure that the team turns up on time for the matches, and you know, the umpires are organized and all the rest of it, because they're junior players, they're not going to organize those things themselves. But then looking at it from sort of more senior level, i.e. sort of senior club level, I still think the coach has a job to do, that they can help the captain, because the captain has, you know, a lot on his plate, especially if he's a amateur player. He's going to have a lot on his plate, and he might not necessarily have enough time to do all the things that need to be done. If a coach is there, the coach can organise the net sessions like we just talked about. The coach can sort out fitness sessions, or, you know, make sure that the local gym, you know, the team gets a discount at the local gym or things like that. The coach can handle sort of the warm-up, the pre-match warm-ups and the cool-downs. So, again, the captain doesn't really have to worry about that. He can worry about being the captain during that time. The coach can help players with... this is one that's overlooked a lot, I think, but I think the coach can help players a lot with goal-setting.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think it's as widespread as it could be, setting goals with players. I think players generally have a vague idea what they want to do. You know, they want to do well or something like that, but they haven't really worked through a way of how they're going to do that. So the goal setting process, really, if you like, and a coach can go through that with a player and help set them some goals. And then once you've got some goals, then you're more likely to achieve them, aren't you? So, and the last thing I think is important for a coach at a senior level to do is to sort of be able to take a step back and look at the big picture, because players, as you know, is cricket's a team sport played by individuals, isn't it? So you get you can easily get wrapped up in your own performance, and even the captain can, you know, particularly if the captain's having a bad run of form. You know, maybe he's starting to think, well, I need to work on my batting here or whatever it is, and he stops thinking, looking at the bigger picture and making longer term plans and deciding perhaps what the best team is for a given day. So that's where the coach can come in there as well, to sort of have a detached overview, because the coach isn't playing. So he can have a detached overview of the whole situation and say, you know, in my opinion, this would work best. But I do think it's important that, certainly at senior levels, that the captain is in charge. The captain is sort of the overall boss, if you like. And Duncan Fletcher put it very well. He said, if you imagine a cricket team as like a company, the captain would be the chief executive and the coach is the consultant. Mm. That's the way he puts it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the coach is there to help, to consult, to guide, to offer advice, but the captain is the one who makes all the final decisions. So I quite like that. That's a nice, that's a nice way to look at it. And I think certainly at senior level, that's dead right. It's slightly different at junior levels, obviously, because the captain is going to be less of the one in overall charge. Because, you know, if you're 14, you don't necessarily know what needs to go into the organisation of a cricket team.
Yeah. Well, David, our next question is from Mujtaba. And he says, how can a coach coach a player with an unorthodox technique, but is successful due to his unorthodox technique, like Sehwag, Malinga, Dhoni or Tanvir? David, I think in situations like these, coaches have the role of not looking at the technique, but maybe deciding the safest technique for them. So if they have an unorthodox technique, but it's mixed for a bowler, they'd sort of try and correct that, keeping the unorthodox technique, but getting him to straighten up a bit more, or maybe even look at his mindset. Because I know Sehwag is one of the most unorthodox players in the world. He had a lot of turmoil trying to listening to Greg Chappell, when Greg Chappell was the Indian coach, and Greg Chappell tried to get him to alter his game. Mm-hmm. That's when Sehwag had a really bad run, but he's credited his current success to Gary Kirsten, because Gary Kirsten has allowed him to play how he does play, but he sort of altered his mindset.
Right.
So he's helped him sort of in his mental thinking, his mental cricket game, more than his actual batting technique and everything else. So is that what a coach would do in situations like these, David? Sort of not look at the technique, but everything outside that?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, this. If we're talking about players who are already at the top of their game, you know, top players like Malinga, Dhoni, people like that, that you don't want to go in all guns blazing and saying, right, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, change this, change that. Because they're not doing it wrong, because they've had a great deal of success. You know, Dhoni's the number one day international batsman in the world as we speak, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, he's got slightly unorthodox technique, slightly bottom-handed, but, you know, it works for him. So, don't change it. You carry on, mate. Same with Malinga. You know, you'd never coach a player to bowl like that, but it works for him. Who knows, you know, who knows how much better he would have been if he'd have got a, you know, a more orthodox bowling action, or possibly how much worse he would have been if he'd got a more orthodox bowling action. But it's too late to change him now. You can't go and change him now. But if you, the problem is really for coaches working lower down the levels, where it's not quite so clear cut, I think, in that do you interfere with, say, a young player who's, you know, maybe 13 or 14 years old, and he's you know, he hasn't had a great deal of success, and he hasn't got a great technique. Do you interfere with his technique then? You know, if you you probably would want to, if it's not working for him, because you want to maximise his or her chances of being as successful as possible, and to do that, you have to kind of build the technique around the player. You have to build from a template, of course. There's a perfect template. You need to get as close as possible to the perfect template to give them the maximum chance of succeeding. But if on the way to getting to the perfect template they work out a method which is good for them, then let them carry on with it as long as it's being successful. And the other thing you mentioned is injury risk. That's an important thing, especially for bowlers. You know, if you've got a bowler who has a mixed action, then you know, you do want to try and change that purely from an injury point of view, because you don't want them keeling over with a stress factor at the age of 25 because you haven't corrected something when they were 11.
Yeah, that's right.
But as a player gets older, it gets more difficult for them to be able to make changes, both physically and also psychologically, because in order to change a player, they've got to want to change, if you see what I mean. You can't just say to a player, right, you're doing this wrong, you've got to change. Because if the player thinks, well, no, I'm not doing it wrong, you know, they don't. A player won't necessarily believe you just because you've said it. In fact, generally speaking, yeah, players don't believe you unless you can show them, you know, unless you video them doing it and go, right, look at that, mate. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So they generally don't believe you. So you've got to... You've got to have a player who's got to want to make a change, and that can become more and more risky the older you get, purely because, especially with something like a bowling action or playing a cover drive, you make one small change, and it affects everything on in the chain, and it might affect everything on in the chain in the sequence of events in a way that player doesn't like.
Yeah.
So it might feel wrong, it might not work for them, and suddenly they lose their game.
Yeah.
So it's a very tricky one, that, you know, coaching players with unorthodox techniques. The key for me is it working? If it's not working, then try and change it.
Yeah, fair enough. David, our last question for today is from Brett, and he says, how can I make fielding practices more interesting for the under-15 age group team that I coach? David, from experience coaching junior players, I found, especially in fielding, which can be really dry at times because players generally want to run around, they want to bowl or bat, but creating a reward based fielding practice, I find that really sort of motivates them.
Yeah.
So when we were practicing throwing at the stumps, standing all around the wicket, we had it that the player who hits the wickets the most amount of times gets a little something, maybe a pack of chocolate or something, and that really motivated them to do better and sort of got their moods up in a sense. Would you do something like that, David, or do you have any other ideas?
Yeah, that's really good. You know, any it's amazing, you know, the tiniest little incentive. You know, I've seen coaches say, you know, anyone who can land the ball in on this line and length, and he puts a mark on, you know, on roughly a good line and length, I'll give him a polo.
Yeah.
Do you have polos in Australia? I don't know how.
We have similar ones. I know what polos are though.
Yeah,
the mint. We've had a few ones here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a mint. I'll give you a, you know, and all the kids, the bunch of 14-year-olds, they go absolutely crazy and start trying to bowl as accurately as possible over a polo. You know, so it's just a cheap mint. So it's amazing how powerful that can be. Yeah, I mean, I think the key with fielding practices is that you keep them as sort of rapid fire as possible, and the way you do that is you sort of get in and get out as quickly as you can. You do it in small groups so people aren't standing around. That's really important for any age, any age from the age of six, especially the age of six.
Yep.
But from the age of six to the age of 50 or 60 even, you know, you can't be standing around for too long. It gets boring if you do that, if you're standing around for too long.
Yeah.
There's one proviso in that is that if you're doing fielding drills and you're trying to work specifically on speed, then you do need long rest times. So you probably would use that as an exception. But generally speaking, if you're doing drills just for a warm-up or something, don't have people standing around too long. Do lots of different drills. Just do the drill, get it done as high intensity as possible, and in as smaller groups as you possibly can, and get it done. And the way to get it done very intensely is to try and get everybody up for it. One of the hallmarks, I think, of a really good side, if you see them warming up and you see them really into it, you know, really encouraging each other, really shouting, really, really sort of trying to get behind each other and slapping each other on the back when they hit the stumps, and, you know, not in a false way, but in a genuine, we really want to make the most of this practice because this is the last practice before we go out and field. And if you see a side warming up like that against you, you think, oh God, yeah. Don't you? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
And one of the things I'm proud of my team is that when we do our fielding drills before play, it's really energetic. You know, everyone's really, really into it. And as soon as the energy starts to drop, we just stop. We go, right, that's it, boys, finished. Because you know that's the end. There's no, you're just flogging a dead horse if you try and carry on after that. Right, okay, we're done. We're done now. The energy's gone. Let's go in, and then that's it. We just pack up and finish. You can also add, you know, as well as sort of prizes, you can add a competitive element. If you have two teams doing fielding drills, you can add in the competitive element. That always gets people going. And the other thing is, if you're doing fielding drills during practice, then I always like to do the fielding drills first before you do anything else. You warm up, then do your fielding drills. Because fielding drills are probably the thing people want to do last. And what usually happens is, if you warm up and then go and have a net or something, then everybody goes, oh, should we do some fielding now? Nah, let's not bother. Yeah. Exactly, oh, I just want to go home now. If you do the drills first, it only takes 10 minutes or whatever, 10, 15 minutes maybe. And, you know, you've got your drills out of the way, then you can have your, you know, have your bat and have your bowl.
The six questions are in association with Pitch Vision Academy's courses, and you can get access to all of the coaching courses on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything that you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 26th of September, where we also have an interview with Richard Welch, Pitch Vision CEO. And so if you have any questions or feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Asempath.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.